Senator Grassley's tied up in a budget vote, so we're not sure if he's going to be able to join us or not. If he sneaks in, that'd be great. I'm getting to that age. Got to have my glasses. Good afternoon, and welcome to the Century of Subsidies birthday party. My name is Rick Schwark, and I'm CEO of Absolute Energy, a 115 million gallon per year ethanol plant located in St. Ansgar, Iowa. I'm also proud to serve as president of the Iowa Renewable Fuels Association. Absolute Energy is also a member of the American Coalition for Ethanol. I want to thank ACE and IRFA for organizing this event. I also want to thank Platinum Ethanol, a 100 million gallon plant in Arthur, Iowa, for providing the spectacular Charm City Cakes creation you see before you. And we're all going to get to sample that here in a little bit, along with some ice cream. So why are we here today? Let me first begin with a quote. The American people benefit most when the free market and consumer choice determine our nation's energy policy. So we oppose government mandates and costly taxpayer subsidies that try to dictate energy choices. The irony of that quote is that it was a quote made by the president of the American Fuel and Petrochemical Manufacturers in an attempt to argue that if we eliminate the RFS and any tax credits for renewable fuels, then we would be left with a free market where consumer choice determines our nation's energy policy. Many people believe that today, maybe even some of you here in this room. I say the quote is ironic because the opposite is true. Ethanol subsidy, which was actually given to oil companies when they blended ethanol, ended in 2011. The costly taxpayer subsidies continue to go to oil companies. In fact, even with the RFS in place, the energy policy playing field for transportation fuels remains dramatically tilted in favor of big oil. And here's my evidence. Today, as this cake so artfully illustrates, we are celebrating the 100th birthday of continuous, permanent, oil industry-specific tax subsidies. That's right. Since the inception of the federal tax code in 1913, oil companies have been able to deduct things like intangible drilling and development costs. The cake tells the story. 2013 marks a century of subsidies for big oil. You might say, so what? The subsidy only adds up to a few billion dollars per year. So how is that such a big advantage? Well, that's the oldest, but not the only oil tax subsidy. There are several other oil tax subsidies and tax preferences that have become permanent law over the past century, which are listed here on this chart. There are other federal supports for oil. You can see the federal support chart, which include federal loan guarantees for oil and gas and only oil and gas pipelines. There's the master limited partnership business structure available only to fossil fuel companies, including petroleum. There's the U.S. Navy's constant protection of the oil shipping lanes in the Persian Gulf. And there's the virtual distribution monopoly that the oil industry has enjoyed for most of the past century and continues to enjoy today. And finally, there's the federal petroleum mandate that the oil industry has enjoyed for roughly the past 40 years. That's right. The real mandate is a federal petroleum mandate, which dictates that every gallon of gasoline of fuel sold in America today to regular passenger vehicles must contain at least 85% petroleum. A federal petroleum mandate, which is backed up by a $25,000 per day fine for anyone who might violate it in their desire to exercise fuel choice for lower cost, cleaner, homegrown fuels. Now let me be clear. We're not here to argue that every big oil subsidy should be eliminated, or even to say that each and every one is bad policy. But we're here to remind folks that big oil receives numerous tax subsidies, and some have been here for 100 years, since 1913. And any discussion of a free market or a level energy playing field or consumer fuel choice or government mandates and costly taxpayer subsidies should keep the facts on this chart in mind. Policies such as the renewable fuel standard don't discourage competition. To the contrary, the RFS is one of the only laws on the books that promotes competition in energy markets. The RFS encourages consumer fuel choice. The RFS encourages lower cost fuel options for American families. And the RFS helps us crack the big oil monopoly that has dictated our fuel choice for the past century. In the words of the great free market capitalist Milton Friedman, the first and most urgent necessity in the area of government policy is the elimination of those measures which directly support monopoly. Big oil has a monopoly, folks, and the RFS is the one measure that is helping to break through that monopoly today. So if you're in favor of greater competition in the fuel marketplace and against monopolies, you should join us in urging Congress to protect the RFS in 2013 and beyond. With that, I'm happy to answer any questions you might have.
Let's do the stands
first. Oh, certainly. Let's do that, Monty.
I'm a sorry stand-in for United States Senator Chuck Grassley. I think any of you who know Senator Grassley know that he wanted to be here, if for no other reason than there's cake and ice cream. But he did send a statement along. We're still hoping that maybe the budget committee will take a break and allow him to sneak down here, but they're doing votes. And also, if you know Senator Grassley, you know he doesn't miss votes. He hasn't missed one in, I don't know, it's like three decades or something. So he did send a statement that I was going to read for you. And this is from Senator Charles Grassley. It says, quote, America needs all of the above for its energy policy, including domestic oil and gas, renewable energy, conservation, and emission-free nuclear. Oil, gas, and nuclear all receive long-standing federal support. Any changes to support for renewables should be made within a broad-based energy policy discussion. Targeting renewables outside of a comprehensive debate doesn't make any sense when it comes to good policy, and is intellectually dishonest if the effort is driven by competition that receives federal support. And then Brian Jones with ACE, I didn't say, Monty Shaw with the Iowa Renewable Fuels Association, and Brian Jones with ACE is going to make read a statement as well.
I'm Brian Jennings with the American Coalition for Ethanol, and if Monty's a poor stand-in for Senator Grassley, I'm a very poor stand-in for Senator Harkin, but we appreciate the support that Senator Harkin and his staff provides to this industry as well. His schedule prevented him from joining us, but he had a statement that I'm going to read. This issue comes down to one thing: supporting renewable energy and our country's energy security, all while creating good middle-class jobs that sustain a green economy in states like Iowa. That is why keeping the RFS in place is so critical. I salute ACE and the Iowa Renewable Fuels Association for recognizing these contributions and continuing their support at a time when it's needed the most. So we appreciate the senators and their support.
Why don't we put Rick back in the middle here, and Brian and I will join him to answer any questions you might have.
Any questions? No, I want to get to the cake.
We were that good, or you're that hungry?
Well, thanks, guys.
I think there's a question.
Was there?
All right. How many different bills right now are you guys facing in to change the RFS or make adjustments right now in any of the House facilities?
I lose track.
Chris, there's at least one bill, I think, both on the Senate and on the House side that would go in and make adjustments to the cellulosic schedule specifically. I think that legislation really misreads the recent court case with respect to the 2011 and the 2012 standards. And so we stand side by side with the advanced and the cellulosic biofuel community and opposing any legislation which would go in and try to, in the words of some, reform or modify the RFS. We expect that there could be additional legislation introduced. Clearly, it's early in the 113th Congress, and so that's why we're out here with IRFA early in this Congress to try and set the tone early, try to get, you know, our grassroots members in front of members of Congress and their staff people to to show, you know, why this industry is so important and show why the RFS is working effectively.
I might just add one thing, which is, you know, higher blends in the RFS are linked. You can't have one without the other. And there's already a couple of different bills that have been introduced to attack higher blends like E15. One in the Senate would literally, I mean, get this, it would literally ban E15 and any ethanol blend above 10% forever, no matter what the testing, no matter what the science, no matter anything. It's the flat-out federal ban on competition to petroleum fuels, supported by the group who talked about wanting a free market. I mean, that's just absurd. And then there's also another one that's been introduced in the House that, while it's not a flat-out ban, you might call it the century of testing bill. It would require testing E15 before it's allowed in the market. They take it out and then require it to be tested and tested. And it's already the most tested fuel in the world. And but they, you know, they just it's just a way to further protect the oil industry. But not, I mean, if that one went through, you'd add another. Line on the chart over here where it's literally an outright ban of any non-petroleum fuels, and it forbids the EPA from approving them. If we have a free market, ethanol is cheaper, it's cleaner, and it's higher performing. We'll do just fine if we had a free market. But right now there's not just the century of subsidies that we're celebrating today, but there's a lot of other things that keep it from being that free market.
Do you know of any members who are committed to eliminating some of those tax subsidies that you're highlighting today as part of perhaps the tax reform package?
There has been an ongoing debate over the last few years about various tax subsidies that the oil industry gets. We're highlighting today just the ones that we feel are basically industry-specific just for the oil industry. There's also been a broader discussion in the Senate over the last few years about some of the more general business tax preferences that are out there that are used to quite an advantage by the oil industry, and just to echo what Rick said, we're not here today to advocate for that. What we're trying to say is, it seems like the other side, when they want to have an energy policy debate, it's always, why do you need the RFS? Why do you need a tax credit? Why do you do this? Let's get rid of all this stuff that renewables gets, and they like to pretend this doesn't exist, as that quote showed that Rick said at the beginning. That, oh, you know, we're just the free market fuel. And we're here today to simply say that's not true. There's context. And any debate that's had around this policy, energy policy, needs to be full, fair, and factual.
Have you guys sat down at all or talked to anybody over in the oil industry recently? If the IRS, I think Drew's maybe?
Sure, Sam. Do you want to take a shot at it, or I can, or Brian? I mean.
Well, I personally have not had any conversations or outreach from either directions. We do talk with petroleum marketers and retailers, okay, and we're trying to work closely at the local level with the retailers, but they're the downstream recipients of this. So, nothing from the API that I'm aware of from my end.
We're a state-level trade association, so to be honest with you, I haven't taken it upon myself to see if I could go meet with the API. There are national groups that we would look to for that. And they've had conversations. They talk all the time. I was at a national ethanol conference recently where API was represented and was sharing their views on one of the panels. And the fact of the matter is, you know, there was some agreement on this policy in 2005 when the original Renewable Fuel Standard Bill passed. When it was expanded in 2007, that seemed to turn a little bit. And as we've gotten closer to the need for higher blends, I think what you find is that E10 dovetails fairly nicely into the economic model of a modern-day refinery in the United States because it allows them to dump a bunch of toxics in their gas and then they dilute it out with the ethanol. But they don't want to give up more market share. And now that we're to that point, that's why we're seeing this year. We'll find out that ethanol does horrible things this year, you know, because this is the make-or-break year for the RFS. Of course, those horrible things won't be true, but we'll be told that. Because if the RFS stays intact this year, higher blends are coming. If they're able to gut the RFS this year, then we're going to have the status quo oil monopoly for another however many years. So this is an important year, and I think that's why you're seeing the other side step up with so many different interesting ways of trying to attack us. But we're just here to say, look, you know, we'll have that debate. We'll have that full and fair and factual debate. But we're not going to let them off the hook with rhetoric that just does not jive with the facts. When this is all on the books, so it's, you know, we can look it up.
Howard Marks with K Street Alternative Energy Strategies. I understand a second E15 gasoline station is open in Iowa, a supplementing one that already opened in Kansas, I believe. Could you tell us a little bit about what the experience has been so far in Iowa, what you know, and as well as far as the E15 being used on the road?
You want me to do that?
Well, actually, thanks for that question, and actually we've just had the fourth open. That's and unfortunately, one of our members was here, always part owner of one of those stations. He's not here today, but it's been a good experience.
Do you want to add to that?
I'd just say that we have four that are open that are registered to sell E15 to 2001 and newer vehicles. There's at least four more that we're aware of that have been approved that are just waiting for some equipment to be set up to match what EPA requires. And when we call them, we say, how are your sales? And it's good. And they say it starts out good, and then there's a little bit of consumer education that goes along with that, and they go up. And we say, are you seeing new faces? And they say, that's the best part. We're seeing new faces because E15 is cheaper. It's usually, at least in Iowa, it's been about 4 to 5 cents a gallon cheaper than E10. You know, we're coming off a winter where despite, you know, this revolution of oil production out of North Dakota, which some people have tried to argue makes our industry not important anymore. We've come off of a winter where we've had the highest gasoline prices ever in the winter, in the non-summer driving season, ever. So we certainly are not fracking our way into low gas prices. And ethanol continues to sell at a significant discount to oil. We kind of wish it didn't, but the fact of the matter is it's the cheapest, cleanest, highest performing fuel. And it's going to be even cheaper for consumers when we get more E15 out there. And Brian, I don't know if you can talk about some of the other states' experience or if you guys have had any.
You know, I'm not the E15 expert at ACE, and I would defer to Ron. But it's safe to say that more and more states and more stations and more markets are seeing an emergence of E15. And really this boils down to price. Imani was referring to that. People purchase fuel based on price. There's no close second. And the gap between where gasoline and ethanol is today is really a meaningful incentive for folks. And what we would hope the oil companies would do, and Christopher, sort of in response to your question too, we're always available to talk to the oil companies, but late last year they changed their position, or so they say, right, to come out in support of repeal of the RFS. And so I think the battle lines are drawn. Folks know where folks are. The oil companies have options to comply with the RFS, E15, E85, and you know, we think that those markets will continue to grow.
I can give you an update on a couple of projects in Iowa, but I'm afraid that, and I'm aware of the others in the United States, I might be a little guilty of being a little parochial and not exactly knowing. Do you have any idea?
Well, I know that in Italy there is a cellulosic plant up and running. I believe it's a 25 million gallon per year plant making cellulosic ethanol out of rice straw, which they had to pay to get rid of before. I know there are four plants. I think there's 12 million gallons of cellulosic production currently going on in the United States. And by the way, none of that is occurring in the Midwest. You know, they're on outlying regions, but there are cellulosic projects going on in the Midwest also. So I don't know if that answers your question. But
I'm
in a way, in a lot of the other countries, and this would vary, there's a lot of other countries, but in a lot of the other countries with large gasoline markets, the incentives are quite the opposite. You go to Europe and some other parts of the world, and taxes on petroleum are rather high. I'm not advocating that's a good or bad thing, I'm just saying it is. And that acts as actually a pull and to get other projects like cellulosic ethanol going. So in a way, they have a lot lower hill to climb than we do here in the United States, where this, where instead of government policy making petroleum expensive, government policy quite, you know, subsidizes it and keeps it so that we have a harder time to get into the marketplace.
If I could just take a stab at that, not with respect to what other countries do. So I'm sorry, I'm unable to answer your question directly because I don't know what other countries do in terms of subsidies for fossil fuels versus renewables. But in respect that the RFS is so critically important, there is a multi-billion-dollar global race taking on right now concerning how we're going to commercialize fuels other than fossil fuels. And the one thing that the United States has going for it, the one thing, is the renewable fuel standard. And so you see innovation being driven into that market. You see investment working its way into that market. You see the commercialization of these advanced biofuels today. It's real. They're not phantom. They're commercialized. They're physical gallons. They're real. And so that's why it's so critical that we keep this RFS in place, regardless of whether oil companies continue to enjoy 100-plus years of subsidies or not, or fossil fuels are subsidized around the globe. What we have is the RFS, and we need to keep it.